Are you ready? It's time for On the Double with the Double S Express. Great sports talk and big-time guests with Sean Wally and Sean Boyd. On the Double with the Double S Express.
The autumn wind is a pirate, blustering in from sea. With a rollicking song he sweeps along, swaggering boisterously. His face is weather-beaten. He wears a hooded sash, with a silver hat about his head, and a bristling black mustache. He growls as he storms the country, a villain big and bold. And the trees all shake and quiver and quake as he robs them of their gold. The autumn wind is a raider, pillaging just for fun. He'll knock you round and upside down and laugh when he's conquered and won.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to On the Double with the Double S Express. Sean Wally alongside Sean Boyd. And yes, The autumn wind is blowing. The NFL season upon us. The Oakland Raiders took on the Cincinnati Bengals yesterday for the home opener in Oakland. Sean Boyd, you were there for CBS Sports. The autumn wind not blowing as blustery as you would like.
It was like a warm summer breeze that blew in yesterday, and I can tell you, Sean, listening to that anthem by the Oakland Raiders, The Autumn Wind is the name of the poem, and man, I get so excited every time I hear it, and of course got a chance to hear it at the game yesterday, and driving into the stadium. Getting there probably around 7:30 in the morning. I'm thinking that I'm going to be there a little early before the natives get there. But boy, was I wrong. The Raider Nation came in droves. And, you know, I haven't been down here this long, Sean. It's going on probably 9-10 years. But when we moved down, it was after the Raiders, you know, great run in their Super Bowl in 2002, 2003. So I haven't had a chance to see the excitement and the fervor, but getting there yesterday at O.co and seeing the overfill in the parking lots and the excitement, I just felt like it was going to be different. It's a different season, and I know that I can't get into one game, and it's just one game, and you and I will both probably be saying that until next week. But the Raiders didn't come out to play, man, and it was the sickest feeling because it felt like a playoff atmosphere and the fans were ready. And, you know, you have your new player and Alden Smith and, you know, things are supposed to be rejuvenated. You have all your young players, rookies and Amari Cooper and Derek Carr is going to come out and do some awesome things along with Latavius Murray and Khalil Mack and the whole nine. And none of that materialized. And it was a weird feeling, you know, just to have the hype towards kickoff. And then, you know, once the ball was kicked, nothing from the Oakland Raiders standpoint. And so, you know, a sad weekend, but I'm still happy that the season is upon us. And, you know, I believe that again, it's just one game and we'll see what happens next week, you know, when the Raiders have another home game. So
what do you attribute the lackluster effort to when you've got the home opener, the first real game of the year, the players should be jacked and ready for it. And head coach Jack Del Rio took full blame on the lackluster play.
I blame it on swag. I just, you know, these guys, they're going to be a great team. I just think that they had so much talk in the offseason about the Raiders for the first time in a long time that they were going to be a great ball club. And I think they just thought that it was just going to magically happen. And it didn't. And so, you know, they're going to have to work at it, you know, and they got punched right in the mouth. You know, Andy Dalton came out and had a terrific game. I think like 25 of 34, he threw for two touchdowns. And, you know, they had great effort from their tight ends. And, you know, Eifert just showed out. 9 receptions, 104 yards from your tight end and 2 touchdowns. I mean, that's a recipe for great success.
Shows you how much the Bengals missed Tyler Eifert last year when he had a season-ending injury in week number one.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, you know, I didn't even know who this guy was, you know, and then all of a sudden he's out for a year and he comes back and, you know, he just looked awesome. I mean, you know, it seemed like Dalton and Eifert were always in rhythm. You know, he was finding them in the seams, and the Raiders' defensive backs, which was something that we knew was going to be a question mark, and boy, did it show. I mean, it really showed, and they're going to have to do something. I mean, right now they're putting Band-Aids on things. They just signed Taylor Mays to a short contract because they've had an injury at the safety position. And, you know, Charles Woodson got injured late with his shoulder. It doesn't sound like it's major, but, you know, all those things, you know, the Raiders are going to have to figure it out that, you know, with being called a good team, you're going to have to perform, and hopefully they will do that soon.
Raiders starting quarterback Derek Carr has a bright future. Everyone's excited to finally have a good starting quarterback at the helm in Oakland, yet he left the game. What is his status for week two and beyond?
Well, you know, it looked really, you know, gruesome because, you know, he ran for 9 yards. Pac-Man Jones knocks him out of bounds. And, you know, while Derek was running, he sticks his throwing hand out, you know, to try to block him. And in the midst of it all, he injures his hand. And it looked like it was going to be something serious because Derek couldn't throw the ball. And, you know, he didn't return to the game. But the MRI and the x-rays proved to be negative, and all it was a bruise. Now, I say that kind of tongue-in-cheek because, you know, that is his throwing hand. But it's just a bruised thumb, and hopefully when the swelling goes down, he'll be okay. He should be ready for this Sunday. It just depends on how soon he heals from this bruised thumb.
Maybe some vanilla ice, baby is the thing that Carr needs to get that hand right for week two.
Yeah, you know, and you know, Matt McGloin comes in, and, you know, Matt's going to be one of those guys. He's a journeyman. He'll be able to, you know, give you the services that you need at quarterback. You know, I just wonder sometimes if he's that person that can, you know, sustain and get you over the top. I mean, he did a good job. It was an okay, I'd say better than okay, 23 of 31, 142 yards, which isn't impressive, but the 2 TDs is impressive, even though he threw a pick. But yeah, he's not the leader of the team. And, you know, when your quarterback goes out, your starting quarterback goes out, you scratch your head a little bit and say, oh my goodness, you know, what are we going to do next? But I believe that Derek Carr is going to be ready. Here's one thing that I must say, Sean, about yesterday's game. The Cincinnati Bengals defensively came in and they were the aggressor. I mean, they punched the Raiders dead in the mouth, and they kind of, you know, rattled them a little bit. And, you know, Pac-Man Jones, there was a point to where, you know, the NFL is going to review one of the plays that he had against Amari Cooper. But those guys, the defensive backs, the linebackers, came in with a vengeance and just set the tone, and the Raiders weren't the same after that. So hats off to the Cincinnati Bengals for their aggressive defense.
I know it's only 1 week, but you saw the Bengals firsthand when it was 30-0. Before Oakland scored, are the Bengals, do you think they can finally get over that hump and be a team that has to be reckoned with in the AFC?
You know, that's a great question because, you know, when you're talking about week one, it's not a time to panic. I just think that, you know, they caught the Raiders off guard, you know, with that swag, and they were riding high. But you're right, Sean, 30-0 at home, and you can't get things going. You know, one of the big stats that we came up with was that the Bengals had 27 plays in the Raiders' territory before the Raiders even had their first one. And, you know, and that came in, I think that was midway through the third quarter or almost late third quarter before the Raiders actually did something, you know, in their territory. That can't happen. Not in, you know, not in the first week. But if we're going to say that, you know, should the Raiders panic, you know, there's a, you know, the Buffalo Bills did an awesome job playing against the Indianapolis Colts. I mean, should we panic on week one with, you know, with the Colts, with Andrew Luck and their loaded team? I just think that it's 1 week and hopefully these guys can, you know, meaning the Raiders can right the ship and, you know, come out next week and prove their muster.
You talked about all the plays the Bengals had in Raiders territory. How about the Raiders not having a snap in Bengals territory until the first play of the fourth quarter?
Yeah, that's what I just mentioned. And, you know, I mean, they went 27 plays before, you know, the Raiders even got into that territory. And that's crazy. That's crazy to me that you can dominate that much and you can take a team out of their style of play at home in the black hole in the Raider Nation, man. So, I mean, that that calls for scratching your head. But, you know, again, I'm just going to take a deep breath and say it's just week one. And hopefully these guys can get better next week.
Alden Smith, who was previously with the 49ers, the other Bay Area team, has been in trouble with the law, but he was signed by Oakland on Friday, and he actually played and had a solo tackle.
Yeah, you know, and Alden, I didn't expect much, you know, with Alden Smith. I think, you know, the fans were waiting with bated breath that, you know, Alden was going to come in on his first play and just devour the offensive tackle and get to the quarterback and make things happen. You know, but Alden Smith became Alden Smith because of a strong strategy by the San Francisco 49ers to do stunts and do crossings and, you know, do red dogs to get this guy to the quarterback. And so far, and yesterday, all the Raiders did was they just had him go man-to-man and just try to overpower his opponent. And, you know, he did okay. I just think, you know, he needs to get his legs and everything. And once they put a scheme in for him, you're going to start to see, you know, a lot better things from that Oakland Raiders front line.
Offensively, Amari Cooper led the way with 47 yards receiving on 5 receptions. Michael Crabtree also 5 receptions and 37 yards receiving. It's a nice mix. You've got 5 catches for both Cooper and Crabtree, 7 for Murray out of the backfield. A good balance, but you would expect a little more yardage for everybody involved.
Yeah, well, Matt McGloin, just all he proved was is that he's a good clock management, time management type of a quarterback. He doesn't take the risk down the field. He always, you know, takes the under, and that's why you're going to have those types of yards that you have. Amari Cooper, I would say to give him a grade for his first NFL professional game, I would probably give him, and he would probably agree, you know, maybe a C+. You know, 47 yards, he's not going to be happy with that. But, you know, it was the first game. He was up against a hostile defensive secondary in the Cincinnati Bengals, and I think he'll learn from it, you know, just getting his feet wet. As far as Michael Crabtree is concerned, you know, Michael, what he said in the locker room yesterday was fantastic, you know, because all of us were asking questions, you know, what's going on? What's going to happen with Derek Carr? Are you nervous? Are you scared? Why do we get the crap kicked out of us? And, you know, Michael Crabtree looked us dead in the eye and said, man, it's only the first game. This is the first game. We're going to be okay. And once he said that, that was enough for me, to back off and say, okay, you know, we'll see what you guys do. We'll see what you got. We'll see what kind of adversity you can overcome here. Because from what we saw yesterday, I mean, I thought there was, you know, means to panic. But Michael Crabtree seems to think not, and these guys will get better. And we'll see what happens.
Yeah, Sean Crabtree had a good quote saying exactly that. It's week one. We're going to get better, and we're going to go back to the lab, meaning between the players and the coaches, they're going to work on getting it fixed and roll the dice in week two.
Yeah, you know, and you know, the great part about week two is that if you win next week, you get to erase week one. I mean, all of that stuff, all the panic that you have, it's just like, whew, my goodness, it was maybe it was Much Ado About Nothing. And, you know, my biggest question mark is that Derek Carr has to come out and have a good game, a solid game. I mean, when you're in your sophomore season, this is something that, you know, it could make or break you if you don't get out to that great start, and hopefully he does.
You know, Sean, maybe Carr needs to find somebody with a hyperbaric chamber, maybe call up Terrell Owens and see if he can borrow it, because he needs that hand healed. If you've got a severely bruised hand, I don't know how you can grip a football.
Yeah, you know, and I'm trying to empathize. You know, I'm thinking, man, with a bruised thumb, you know, what could I do? But, you know, I've nicked my fingers before. When you lose a limb, I mean, that, it hurts, man. I mean, you can't function for a while. And you know, I'm trying not to, you know, downplay it and say, gosh, it's just a thumb. But when you rely on that thumb to put pressure on the football and to grip the football and guide it to where you need it, where you want it to go, I mean, it's tough, man. So hopefully that bruising can go down. I'm sure he's going to have a lot of ibuprofen, maybe a cortisone shot or two. I don't know what they do in the locker rooms there, but I believe that they'll get him right and he'll be ready to play on Sunday.
Some form of witch's brewer special potion. Hopefully whatever it is will work for Carr and the Raiders. But Sean, as you know, lots of football action all weekend. The NFL started on Thursday and still isn't done. Two games tonight as well on the first Monday Night Football of week one. Sean, yeah. You know, all the teams that are 1-0 right now, they're thinking they're going to the Super Bowl. Bengals included. Buffalo, you know, taking out the Colts. Who saw that coming?
You know, I surely didn't. You know, and the funny part is with the with Fantasy League, I mean, that is your outlet to escape. And so I'm in a pick'em league as well. So that's where you pick the teams to win. And there was no way in the world that I was going to pick Buffalo over Indianapolis. And, you know, I'm thinking Andrew Luck's going to do his thing. And I mean, he did okay. He had two interceptions, but 26 of 49, 243 yards. That was good. But the thing that hurt Indianapolis the most was not having a running game, even though Indianapolis hasn't had one for a while. You know, Frank Gore only had 31 yards. But you got to tip your hat off to Tyrod Taylor and the gutsy move that Rex Ryan made as far as making him the starter. 14 of 19, 195 yards, and a touchdown, and he controlled the offense, which was, you know, and Sean, dare I say, it was something similar to what we see with Russell Wilson. I mean, this kid, Tyrod Taylor, I'm not saying that he's Russell Wilson, but Tyrod Taylor, he played a masterful game as far as controlling the offense and getting them up and down the field. And I mean, they look like a pretty good team.
Absolutely. Tyrod Taylor and the Buffalo Bills did show out, and we have reconnected with John in Seattle. John, what'd you think of week one in the NFL?
What's up, fellas? Sean and Sean. Wish I could be with you. The Angels are in town. Got to be at Safeco. Working the Mariners game. But hey, let's talk some football. Great weekend, of course. NFL debuted, so we're going to not even talk about college football myself. Marcus Mariota, Jameis Winston, the last two Heisman Trophy winners battling it out down number one and number two picks in Tampa Bay. Marcus looking like he's got some business, guys. 13-16, four touchdowns. Meanwhile, Winston, his first pass, pick six. Last guy to do that was Brett Favre. He had a pretty good career. Meanwhile, in Mile High Stadium, the Broncos and Peyton Manning with a new coach, new coordinator, taking on the Baltimore Ravens. They looked very, very good. The unfortunate thing is we had an injury to Terrell Suggs. His career is probably going to be over. Torn Achilles. Speaking of injuries, Andre Ellington, running back for the Arizona Cardinals, hurt without being touched. Guys, a lot of people are getting injured without even being touched. You know, when that happens, it's bad. Nevertheless, speaking of the Cardinals, Carson Palmer coming back from injury, still undefeated as a starter for the Cardinals. They looked very, very impressive in their victory. More injuries. Dez Bryant for the Cowboys, 4 to 6 weeks. The heart and soul, broken bone in his foot, having surgery today. Also, the Redskins, DeSean Jackson, pulled hammy. Derek Carr trying to do the stiffy to somebody. Guys, you can't do that with your throwing hand. He's going to be out for a little while. T.Y. Hilton gone from the Colts. a big upset for them in Buffalo. Luke Kuechly also out for the Carolina Panthers. Real quick, talking about tonight's games, Chip Kelly, Sam Bradford, under a lot of pressure, guys, a lot of pressure. Shady went to the Bills. They upset the Colts, one of the Super Bowl contenders and favorites in the AFC. Meanwhile, I know you guys will probably be talking about a little game in St. Louis. Nick Foles departed from Philadelphia. Man, he looked really, really good against the Seahawks, guys. He looked really, really good. Again, Nick Foles, Shady, both leading their teams to victories against Super Bowl favorites. So Chip Kelly and his guys have a big, big game tonight down in Atlanta. Okay. Also, the 49ers hosting Adrian Peterson in his comeback. Teddy Bridgewater, I think he's going to have a spectacular season this year, guys. He was very, very good last year. You remember this guy. He took off the glove during his combine or whatever and threw the ball all over the place. You know, he dropped in the draft. But now this kid has got weapons. Mike Wallace, Charles Johnson. And he's got Adrian Peterson back. And the 49ers, they got Colin Kaepernick and Tom Sula's the new coach and everybody else left. They have nobody. Sean, are you going to be at the game tonight? Because I tell you what, I don't know who's going to be playing defense. Everybody's retired. I feel bad, but I don't, because as a Raiders fan, it was heartbreaking yesterday. Like I said, Derek Carr with the bad injury, putting his hand out there. You got a slide right there. And that's about it, guys. Two big games tonight. The football season is well under its way. I love you. I miss you. God bless, and we will see you next week.
That's some good stuff from Fu Man doing his duties, working for the television networks at the home game at the Safe. The Mariners taking on the Los Angeles Angels and taking some time out. Man, Sean, he had a little bit of passion when he was talking about, you know, some of the scores and the highlights, man.
John Wittig representing for the 253 up in actually in the 206 at Safeco Field. That was direct from Safeco Field. John working for the baseball broadcast tonight. But, man, he hit on a lot of good points. And, goodness, that was a great roundup of what went on in the NFL.
You know, there are a lot of injuries that he was talking about. And, you know, one of them was for one of my fantasy running backs, and Andre Ellington for the Arizona Cardinals. Gosh, that hurt when he went down in the fourth quarter. You know, I'm hanging on for dear life. Actually, I'm not hanging on. I'm trying to catch up here. I'm about 7 points down, and I've got the Minnesota defense to try to bring me home and bring me this victory. But Andre Ellington going down, that really hurt. Fu Man was talking about Terrell Suggs and, of course, having the Achilles injury. Man, that was major for the Baltimore Ravens. And, of course, the Ravens come into the black hole next week. And, my goodness, I mean, being minus Terrell Suggs, that kind of gives us a little bit of a chance. But one of the biggest injuries was that of, well, DeSean Jackson, of course, going out. But then, you know, the Dallas Cowboys. I mean, what can you say? You know, their leading receiver going out, and he's got Dez Bryant. He's going to be out, sounds like, for 4 to 6 weeks. But yet the Cowboys, man, they did what they needed to do, and they came back and beat the New York Giants. But, yeah, there are a lot of injuries that went on in that week one. And of course, he'd mentioned Derek Carr, which, gosh, we're praying and crossing our fingers that Derek's going to be okay. But let's stop the injuries, man. We can't have it. It's madness. And, man, we want to see our best players playing.
Yeah, Sean, that was a great game last night on Sunday Night Football. You know, NBC was thrilled with that, to have it come down to the wire. Those two teams, the Giants, the Cowboys, that hate each other, the NFC East rivals, and it lived up to its billing.
Yeah, you know, I'm still scratching my head as far as why in the world would you have Eli Manning roll out and throw a pass when all they had to do was run the clock down to about 40 seconds. And, you know, it is what it is. You know, these guys make these kind of calls, but that's something that, you know, the Giants will have to relive until they play the Cowboys again midseason. It was a tough one. We're going to take a quick break, and when we return, we're going to have our first guest on. That's Greg Bell of the Tacoma News Tribune and Seahawks Insider. So keep it locked in. You're listening to the best sports talk on the Double with the Double S Express.
What's my image?
At Images Barbershop and Styles, you get the best cut, the best design, and the best styles in the Sacramento area. Plus the affordable price, along with the fun, family-friendly atmosphere, you'll walk away with a look of satisfaction and the feeling of a new you. Do you have your image?
We have ours!
Images Barbershop and Styles, located at 10040 Bruceville Road, Elk Grove, California, Suite 140. For appointments, call 916-271-0218. That's Images Barbershop and Styles.
I'm Chris Walls, and I'm a truck driver from Missouri. For 13 hours a night, I sit in my truck and I drive. Out of boredom, I'll stop and eat. If I'm not doing fast food, I guarantee there's a bag of chips open on my dashboard. Along with that, I'm good for about 4 liters of soda a night. That was all until Andro 400. I started out 4 months ago weighing 341 pounds. And since taking Andro 400, I have dropped 45 pounds. I'm sleeping better. There's no cravings. There's no excessive thirst. My knee pain went away. I've had some lower back issues, and I've noticed that that went away. And I can only contribute that to Andro 400. One thing that Andro 400 said on the radio ad says it attacks belly fat. Well, let me tell you, it did. I've lost 6 inches. This product really does work.
So guys, if you'd like to experience similar results, then get Andro 400, the safe, natural, and inexpensive way to boost your testosterone. Go to andro400.com. andro400.com.
Who likes the inconvenience of car repairs? Not only do car repairs take time and money from you, but can you even trust your repair shop? Nate, Dave, and the team at Platinum Automotive Services in Tri-Cities, Washington are honest and trustworthy, and they take great care of your vehicle. From the basic oil change to full engine rebuilds, they do it all. Like the Platinum Automotive Services Facebook page for a shot at a free oil change. Platinum Automotive Services, platinum service without the platinum price.
Welcome back to On the Double with the Double S Express, Sean Wally and Sean Boyd.
Some legends are told, some turn to dust or to gold, but you will remember me.
Hey, how about these ball hawks from the Pacific Northwest? Oh, I get it. Some might call them overconfident, a little bit full of themselves, but is it bragging if you back it up? Let's see. You hit them, they hit you harder. You get in their face, they get right back in yours. Basically, anything you do, they'll do better. Hold on. This isn't a sightseeing, we're just happy to get back to the big dance kind of thing for these guys. These fellas have meant business all season long. A hit first, ask questions later defense. A beast moves the earth when he runs. And a quarterback destined for this spotlight. So what do you say, Seattle? That other team may be a mile high, but we all know you guys crank it all the way up to 12.
That is right. Seattle Seahawks week one didn't go as planned, but a guy that was there and has all the inside information is joining us now on the Chandler Reach Winery Hotline, Greg Bell, the Seahawks insider from the Tacoma News Tribune. Greg, thanks for your time tonight.
Yeah, you're welcome. Hello, guys. How's it been?
Man, that was... Hey, Sean, was that Matthew McConaughey that did the narrating?
That was Kurt Russell.
That was Kurt Russell. Oh, God.
The Super Bowl in New York, New Jersey.
Oh, my goodness. That's right. Kurt, man, I got chills, man. Just listening to that. And so, wow, week one, Greg. And we were thinking that Seattle was going to go in there and take care of business, just like Kurt Russell was saying. And actually, it was actually really a good football game, though.
Well, Kurt Russell's never had to block the Rams' defensive line. That was the Seahawks' problem yesterday. That's the Seahawks' problem every time they go to St. Louis. It was the worst possible matchup for the Seahawks offense because they had three starters in three new positions, new as of 3 weeks ago, including a new center, Drew Nowak, who is a college defensive tackle. He's making his first NFL start yesterday. So Russell Wilson had to make the line calls, try to help out Nowak, and the first half was a mess. I mean, Wilson ended up getting sacked six times for the game, three in the first half. They tried to send Jimmy Graham downfield to use him down the field where he has the best advantage, and they couldn't do it because they just could not take the time to let Graham run down the field. So by the second half, Graham was running one-yard routes, and that's how bad it got for the Seahawks offense. On paper, it looked great. I mean, Wilson set a career high with 32 completions, 41 attempts, but he only threw for 7 yards per completion, five catches for just 51 yards for Jimmy Graham. They couldn't get a single yard in overtime when they needed to with Marshawn Lynch because every Ram back to Merlin Olsen was in the backfield and tackled Marshawn Lynch for a loss of yardage when all they needed was a yard to keep playing. So the offensive line remains a big issue for them, and they're going to get a very active front this week. Not as aggressive and not as talented, I don't think, in Green Bay, but still they're going to come after him just like St. Louis did.
Now, Greg, what does Seattle do with this offensive line? This is something that's not new. We've been talking about this throughout the preseason. You had mentioned Drew Nowak getting moving from defense to offense. I mean, is this something that they can patch up and make better? Because Max Unger's not walking back through the door, and now they have to put Band-Aids on things. Is this something that the Seahawks can overcome?
Well, they have so far. I mean, they won the last two Super Bowls with a line that wasn't too much better. I mean, it was better because they did have Max Unger in the middle, but Unger missed six games last year with injury. This is the way the Seahawks have built their team. They spend all their money on their defense and on Russell Wilson and his $87 million contract and the $5 million they gave Marshawn Lynch. And in today's salary cap age, you have to pinch pennies somewhere, and they pinch it on their offensive line. And they tell the line coach, Tom Cable, go take these college defensive tackles and practice squad guards and make them starters. And they still have Russell Okung, a first-round draft pick from half a dozen years ago, but he's in the last year of his deal and probably won't get re-signed. So it's where they save money. It's where they keep themselves under the cap, and they just make do. And they have a quarterback, Russell Wilson, who they think can mask a lot of these offensive line issues by just escaping the rush. The problem yesterday was Robert Mathis and Chris Long and Donald, the defensive tackle, were too fast for Wilson to get outside of, and he couldn't escape like he normally does against defenses.
Greg, how much regret do you think there might be at the VMAC for trading a Max Unger, not re-signing a James Carpenter, even though they weren't that thrilled with Carpenter overall, but it's got to be better than what's out there right now?
Well, they're never going to – they won't regret getting Jimmy Graham. And the cost of Jimmy Graham is a two-time Pro Bowl center and first-round draft pick, so be it. And by the end of the year, that's going to be a net gain. Not every defensive front is like St. Louis. Not every defense will blitz them as much as the Rams did, although they should if they want to succeed. I just think that that was, as I said, a very bad matchup for the offensive line, and it made the passing game look way different than it will look. You're going to see Graham get down the field and isolated on guys who can't cover him and for bigger, bigger plays than he did yesterday. I don't think it's a regret at all. And, I mean, the offensive line can only get better from how they played yesterday. And considering it was Nowak's first game, you would think that by midseason he will be a lot better. If they run the ball better than they did yesterday, then the pass rush and the blitzing doesn't have as much juice as the Rams did. I think that'll ultimately be what they go back to is the power running with Marshawn Lynch setting the tone, and it just didn't set anything yesterday.
Your thoughts on the final play call, the fourth and one, with three wides, shotgun formation. This time they do run the ball, but all for naught.
Well, that's their base play now, and their zone read option on offense. They go shotgun. They don't go under center. They let Wilson read the defense in the defensive end and whether to hand off to Lynch or keep it himself. So that's what they've gone with the last couple of years. So that's their base play. And they got a couple of yards, 3 or 4 yards per try on that yesterday, even without holds. Usually Lynch will get 3 or 4 yards even without blocking. The problem on that play is Lynch was about ready to cut backside. The play was designed to go left. he usually cuts those back when he doesn't see room on the left, but when he cut back, he ran right into the defensive end who had blown up the right tackle, Gary Gilliam, who, by the way, was for 3 years a college tight end. He was making his first career start at right tackle. So they had both the front side and back side covered. There were no cutback lanes for Lynch. That's why that play was ruined. But, yeah, fourth and one, you're definitely going to run the ball. It had nothing to do with the Super Bowl, different situation. That wasn't fourth down in the middle of the field. But they'll go back to that play. They'll do it again. And I think against a less active, less talented defensive front, that would work most times.
Greg Bell with the Tacoma News Tribune and Seahawks Insider joining us here on the Double. And now, Greg, of course, there is one major player that the Seahawks are waiting to come back to camp, and that's Cam Chancellor. And, of course, in the fourth quarter, in the fourth quarter with about 50 seconds left, I believe, his replacement, Deion Bailey, was put in a position that was a moment of truth. And, you know, he wasn't able to defend against Lance Kendricks. I mean, is that something to worry about? I mean, it just seemed like a fluke play, but, you know, at the same time, if Cam was there, I think things would have probably been a little different.
Well, that was great coaching on the Rams' part. They waited until the play that they had to make to get a first down, third and five, down seven, with about 58 seconds left, to target and isolate Deion Bailey, the college linebacker at USC, out wide against Lance Kendricks as a wide left tight end. And they did, one-on-one, and all he ran was a simple go route. And Bailey was too close to the line of scrimmage. Pete Carroll mentioned today that if you're going to bump that closely, you better bump him. And he was up close to the line and didn't bump him. Kendricks got around him to the outside release, and when Bailey tried to turn and run with Kendricks, he put his feet in the ground and fell in the turf right on his face. He was on the ground as Kendricks caught the ball alone at the 5 yard line and walked in.
Yeah,
I think it was coincidental that it was Chancellor still in who they targeted, but outside like that. But that's definitely a concern, not so much for that play as much as the entire game. There was miscommunication. Rams were completing a lot of passes over the middle behind the linebackers that Chancellor is usually coming up to make the hits on. It was definitely noticed yesterday that 31 wasn't in there for the defense. It cost himself $267,000. It might have gained him some leverage, but as of today, Pete Carroll says nothing's changed. Their stance isn't changing. The Seahawks are dug in, not willing to negotiate anything. So he'll be missing Sunday at Green Bay as well.
Well, one of the things that we must do is we must give St. Louis a little bit of credit, as you were saying. I mean, my prediction, Sean, and I don't know if you remember, but I predicted that the Seahawks would win this thing like 31-10 and that they would take care of business. Well, Seattle's offense came up with their part. It was just the defense didn't show up. But one of the things that I didn't realize, Greg, was how much talent St. Louis had that's similar to Seattle. So Tyler Lockett ran the 57-yard punt return in the first quarter. But then we forget about Tavon Austin. And how could we do that? I mean, he matches it with 75-yard punt return in the third. And, I mean, the rest is history. I mean, the score is close, but it just, you know, St. Louis just was a little better.
Well, this is the first time in 24 games under Pete Carroll the Seahawks have scored 30 or more points but lost. And that was because of that special teams play that you just mentioned, Austin's 75-yard punt return. Their edge guys got blocked. Their exquisite running gunner, first guy down on all the punts, Ricardo Lockett, got blown up by three Rams. The Rams decided John Fossil, their special teams coach, always has something different for the Seahawks. Last year it was a fake punt return, and this year it was three guys blocking Ricardo Lockett, and Cassius Marsh on the edge got blocked as the last guy who could contain that side that Austin went down. He got blocked, and then it was untouched for Austin. But through all that, the Seahawks scored 18 points in a row in the fourth quarter and actually went from 24-13 down to 31-24 up when Kerry Williams got a sack, fumble, and returned for a touchdown, the first one of his life, with about 5 minutes left. So you're thinking, okay, here's the top-ranked defense in the league the last 2 years. Again, like they did in the Super Bowl, being asked to hold a lead, and they didn't do it.
Now, Greg, Sean mentions Tyler Lockett. You've seen this guy from day one at the VMAC. What is this guy capable of, and was he utilized enough yesterday?
He's capable of huge things. They drafted him to be the punt returner and kickoff returner to fix two of the worst parts of the team last year, and he's done that instantly. Yesterday, the first ball he touched in an NFL regular season game, punt return, he ran back 57 yards for a touchdown. That's the first punt return Seattle's had for a score in 8 years. Nate Burleson, the last guy to do it before him. What he has done is been more active in the offense, and as he's emerged, he's now the number three wide receiver, taking what they thought might be Chris Matthews or Ricardo's locker role this year. And he's number three right now behind Doug Baldwin and Jermaine Kearse. Now, he didn't get utilized a lot yesterday because he's more of a crossing pattern, mid-range guy. And like I mentioned earlier, they just didn't have time to even wait for five-yard patterns by the second half. So look for him to be a lot more involved in the passing game against teams that don't pressure or aren't as successful on the defensive front that St. Louis was. But they think they got a lot more than a normal rookie third-round pick. Not only is he going to return every kick, he's going to be number three in the wide receivers on passing down.
Greg, what positives can the Seahawks take away moving into week two against Green Bay Sunday night?
Well, despite all their problems, they had an 18-point fourth quarter to take the lead. Their special teams is much better. Jimmy Graham's going to make their passing game much better. Their defense is going to get a lot better in tackling just by the fact that they do it. NFL teams now, guys, as you probably know, they don't practice tackling, and they don't bring guys to the ground in practices because players are too valuable to get hurt. So all the teams practicing is done in the games, and in that sense, that was only the third and a half time they've brought anyone to the ground since the Super Bowl, counting the preseason game, and the fact that they didn't really play the last preseason game, the fourth one of the summer. So I think a lot of the issues you saw yesterday, miscommunications and missed assignments, those are fixable errors that a guy like Deion Bailey won't miss the next time, and Earl Thomas will get more adept at being a traffic cop than Cam Chancellor used to be. I think some of those issues are going to clear themselves up. The one nagging problem that will remain for the next few weeks at least is this offensive line. We'll see if Green Bay is as successful as St. Louis was on their defensive front, but this is still a very talented team. There's a lot of talent on this team. Cam Chancellor there or not, this is still the first-ranked defense in the last 2 years in the league. Bobby Wagner's still the middle linebacker. Michael Bennett and Cliff Averill put a great game yesterday. They're still up front. So just on a talent, player talent level, this is still a top three or four team, whether they have everybody there or not.
Yeah, you know, and I have to agree with that, Greg. And, of course, you mentioned Cliff Averill, and I was going to bring that up. I mean, this guy was in the backfield quite a bit and got to Nick Foles. I think he hit him three times. And I believe he had a sack. So, you know, he came to play yesterday, no doubt.
He had, I thought, the best game on either side of the ball for the Seahawks. He affected plays. He made Foles get away from him a few times and have to throw the ball away even when Averill didn't hit him. I thought he played great in the run game. They decided to go. The Rams just started running plays away from Averill by the end of the game. And no doubt, he is an underrated part of that defense. When he went out with the concussion in the Super Bowl, that's when Tom Brady got more time to throw. That's when the Patriots were able to double-team Michael Bennett, and suddenly the pass rush for Seattle didn't even affect Brady at all. He throws two touchdowns after Averill went out, and they lose. I think Cliff Averill is that important to the defensive line.
Now, of course, with the San Francisco 49ers playing tonight against the Minnesota Vikings in week one here, kind of give us an idea on what you think after this first week in the NFC West. Of course, Carson Palmer still undefeated as a quarterback for the Arizona Cardinals. I mean, of course, we all know the injury that he had last year, which opened the door for the Seahawks to make the run. But how do you see things faring after week one?
Well, I think that you mentioned Carson Palmer. That is the Seahawks' biggest threat in the division, I think, is a healthy Carson Palmer. People forget. It's easy to forget that the Cardinals were 11-1 and on their way to home field in the NFC playoffs until Palmer got hurt. And then Ryan Lindley had to happen, and the Seahawks got to face Ryan Lindley twice in the last 6 weeks, bumped them both times, won the division, got home field, and got to the Super Bowl. If Carson Palmer doesn't get hurt, that whole narrative changes, and the Seahawks are probably on the road at the end of the playoffs. So that's how important Carson Palmer is. Now, if the Cardinals can get a running game, that's when that team becomes very dangerous. So they still, I think, remain a threat. We knew St. Louis was going to give the Seahawks problems with their defensive line, and that wasn't a huge, huge shock that they lost yesterday the way they did. I don't think there's really a big need to cause for alarm or anybody worried about Seattle, and there's no panic up here. 49ers, I think they're going to be as good as Colin Kaepernick lets them be, and when he's good, that team is very good offensively. Their defense, of course, lost just about everybody in an unprecedented offseason, so you don't know what you're going to get in San Francisco on the defensive side of the ball because of all the defections and retirements, but if Colin Kaepernick has improved, as my buddies in the Bay Area tell me they are, that team's going to be better than I think a lot of people say they will.
Greg Bell, your office next Sunday night, Lambeau Field. A, have you been there before? And B, what's your take on Titletown USA, as they like to call it?
Oh, yeah. Been there many times. Been there for the snowy playoff game. I don't know if you remember that, about 2006 or 7 or whatever that was, when
Matt Hasselbeck,
unexpected blizzard hit.
They want the ball, and they're going to score.
I wasn't there for that game. Now, that was in 2004, I believe it was.
Okay.
When he said it, the overtime, we want the ball, and we're going to score. And then he ended up throwing a pick six at the end of the season. There was a playoff game. It was two years after the Super Bowl, the first Super Bowl that they went up there. And they took an early lead, and Hasselbeck was still the quarterback. Holmgren was still the coach. They took an early lead at Green Bay, and then just got ransacked and lost by three or four scores by the end in a snowstorm. Lambeau's still a great, I mean, it is almost like it used to be. And it for a modernized NFL stadium, it's been remodeled. It's still a very quaint, loud bowl of a stadium and a great atmosphere outside for the game. The entire town, it's like a high school. I grew up in Ohio. It's like a high school town because they've got people paying to, you can park your cars on their front lawns, and there's tailgating, and you can smell the bratwurst, and it's a very collegial setting and a really cool one, and unlike any other town in the NFL, and one of our best stops for sure. It's not very easy to get to. We fly into Chicago or Milwaukee, and most people of the teams, in the Seahawks case, they stay in Appleton, which is about 45 minutes away, but yeah, once you get there, it's a pretty idyllic place for football.
Greg, what do the Seahawks have to do to have a chance in this game Sunday night?
They got to run the ball so they can keep the ball out of Aaron Rodgers' hands and not let Rodgers do as much as he wants to do. And to run the ball, the offensive line needs to be a lot better in their zone blocking than they were against St. Louis. The Packers don't have a defensive line like the Rams do. They gave up 189 yards rushing yesterday to Chicago. Matt Forte had 141. And Marshawn Lynch and the Seahawks got to think, well, if Forte can get 141 on the Packers, they should be able to run the ball. That will in turn lessen the pass rush on Russell Wilson. It should give Jimmy Graham opportunities down the field that he didn't have yesterday. Then you go on the defensive side of the ball, and Aaron Rodgers, I mean, if Deion Bailey thought the Rams went after him, wait till Aaron Rodgers gets him. He's going to target Bailey in the middle of that defense. It's going to be incumbent on Earl Thomas to help him out in the middle of the field. One thing the Seahawks did yesterday they had never done before, and it sounds like they're going to do again this week, is put Richard Sherman inside as the nickelback on obvious passing downs. And as much as the Packers throw and as much as they go into multiple wide receivers, you're going to see the all-pro cornerback, it looks like, Richard Sherman in the middle of the field as nickelback quite a bit Sunday night.
Greg Bell, Seahawks insider, the Tacoma News Tribune. Follow him on Twitter at GBellSeattle. Greg, thanks so much for your time tonight.
Always good to talk to you guys. Thanks a lot.
All right. Take care, Greg.
There goes Greg Bell giving us all the insight from the game in St. Louis yesterday. Rams victorious over Seattle and looking forward to Sunday Night Football next week.
Yeah, you know, Sean, I think Greg was spot on when he was talking about the Seahawks have to run the ball and run the ball effectively. Marshawn Lynch had 18 carries. But here's one of the things that maybe you can answer for me because, of course, you're closer to the Seahawks organization than I am, but Fred Jackson only had 3 carries. I mean, is he going to get a little bit more of the load to help establish this run game?
Well, Sean, I think eventually, yes. Number one, he's only been around week and a half. So on one hand, he's still learning the system and learning everything he needs to do. But also, do you want to replace Lynch with Fred Jackson more often than not? Probably not.
Yeah, you know, and I know that in Seattle this morning, you know, there are some Monday morning quarterbacks that have kind of squelched the noise from the Super Bowl and saying, man, we should have gave the ball to beast mode. And of course, as you had mentioned earlier, as soon as they gave that opportunity in the fourth in the fourth quarter, or in overtime, I'm sorry, and Marshawn Lynch couldn't come up with the first down. I mean, does that still, does that kind of vindicate, you know, what coach called in the Super Bowl, or are people still upset that they didn't get the ball to Marshawn?
Well, you've got people that say it's the exact same thing because you just needed 1 yard, and you've got other people saying they're completely different and no, they don't relate. So it really just depends on your opinion and what you think. The bottom line is, again, they needed 3 feet, and whatever the play was called, it didn't work. The offensive line got blown up, and what I'm really wanting to see from the offensive line in Seattle is attitude and fight. I know Justin Britt is that gritty guy, but really, they miss somebody with a lot of attitude like Breno Giacomini, who they had a few years back, and they decided not to re-sign him. And he left for the East Coast and is making a lot of money and playing for one of those teams back east. And, you know, he was a guy that always was pushing the pile late, playing till or just after the whistle. Got a lot of personal fouls called on him. But you know what? At some point, you need that guy with that grit and that chutzpah that is just going to stick his nose in there and not take any guff from anybody.
And what about this? Of course, you know, Russell Wilson, he is the type of quarterback that can, you know, he controls things. He can make things happen, and he can, you know, make magic happen at the end of the game. But 41 attempts for Russell Wilson, I think that's a little overdoing it for him. And what are, do you know what his stats are when he throws over 35 plus or what his winning percentage is? I mean, that's something that we'll probably have to look up and find out.
Well, Sean, what I think is key there is people say, you know, he's not a top tier quarterback and he can't carry a team. He helped them score 18 points in the fourth period and take the lead.
Yeah,
he wasn't playing defense and wasn't out there to stop the Rams and not allow them to score when Bailey fell down and Kendricks had the wide open touchdown. It was way too easy. And Russell showed 41 attempts, and he completed, I believe, 32 of them. Okay, so he missed on 9 passes. That's a really good percentage. And, you know, this logic that he can't, you know, throw 40, 50 times a game, he's done it time and time again when he's needed to, and he's more often than not done a good job.
Yeah, and he's also found his safety blanket. Of course, the big acquisition in the offseason, Jimmy Graham, he had 6 receptions for 51 yards and a touchdown within those 18 points that you were talking about. And so I think that, you know, Russell knows and he's very confident in who he is. And, you know, again, I'm a little curious to see what his winning percentage is, you know, when he throws over 35 plus.
You know, Sean, of course, in the Pacific Northwest, all of the 12th man love their Seattle Seahawks. But here's something for you. The Seattle television market, of every TV that was on between 10 a.m. and 1 p.m. yesterday, which 10 a.m. was kickoff for the game, 77% of all televisions were on Fox for the St. Louis Seahawks game.
Man, that's big, because I don't know which game was. I think the game on CBS was the Houston Texans Kansas City Chiefs game for the West Regional. And so, yeah, that wasn't one that people wanted to watch. So I would definitely watch the Seattle Seahawks play as well.
And who thought it was going to be that entertaining? Going to overtime, big lead changes, Seahawks score 18, take the lead, last minute touchdown by the Rams. I mean, it had a lot of, you know, drama, and who knew? Overtime, 34-31, and the irony, Sean Boyd, of the Seahawks scoring Cam Chancellor's number.
Yeah, I didn't see it coming, actually. I knew that Seattle was going to put some points on the board. I didn't think that St. Louis would match it. You know, one of the things that we haven't talked about is the, you know, the great coaching of Jeff Fisher. And, you know, we keep undermining that, but this guy is a phenomenal, solid coach, and he can take, you know, his players and they can elevate them, or he can elevate them to newfound heights. And of course, what they have been focusing on over the past few years in the drafts as their first round picks is they've been looking to beef up that defensive line, and they definitely have their starting defensive line in place for a long time in Mathis, Long, and Donald. And so, I mean, these guys aren't going anywhere. I think they're going to be tough in the NFC West.
Well, absolutely. Jeff Fisher is a great coach, and he's proven that in Tennessee and doing that now in St. Louis. And for whatever reason, the Edward Jones Dome there in St. Louis is a house of horrors for the Seahawks. Fisher is 3-1 coaching the Rams against the Seahawks in St. Louis.
Yeah, you know, it's a shame that, you know, the ownership's talking about moving that team down to Los Angeles, because that is a, you know, playing in the Edward Jones Dome is, you know, it's, I kind of liken it to the old Seahawks would, you know, playing in the Kingdome, man. I mean, that place gets loud. People get behind their team. But, you know, I just think that Seattle, you know, I just ran out of gas. I mean, you go into overtime. I mean, it's a crapshoot, and that's what happened.
Why don't we all just blame Tavares Jackson for the loss? He goes out there, calls the coin toss, tails, which, hey, Wesley Snipes taught us, tails never fails. It did.
Oh, man. Well, you know, one of the things that Greg was talking about as far as Cam Chancellor is concerned, that both camps are not budging. But here's a demand that Cam Chancellor is talking about, and this might be something that Seattle would want to consider, is if he comes back, they take away those fines. And if they can come to some type of an agreement there, I think you might see Cam Chancellor in a uniform more sooner than later. That's something that Seattle will definitely be praying for, you know, especially barring what happens this weekend in Green Bay.
Well, Sean, you mentioned praying, and our good buddy G. Scott, former DSX guest, big-time guest G. Scott on the Justin and G. Show on 710 ESPN Seattle, tweeted out earlier this evening that he had a conversation with Cam Chancellor, and Cam says it's in God's hands.
Well, you know, that's easy to say now, but, you know, we'd have to go into a whole nother segment on this one, because I still believe that once you sign a contract, especially with 3 years to go, you honor it. That's just me. You know, there are a lot of people that you know, favor Cam and say, hey, you know, he wants to feed his family and take care of his family. Well, I thought we had that discussion a year ago when you signed the contract then. But, you know, again, it's just me. But, you know, to say it's in God's hands now after you've had the, you know, pretty much stirred the pot, you know, because some of your other teammates have gotten a little bit more money. Seattle was going to pay him. They were going to pay him in a couple of years, and all he had to do was wait and win another Super Bowl, for crying out loud, and his riches and rewards would have probably exceeded what he could possibly think or imagine.
And come on, wouldn't God say, go to work, earn your living?
Yeah. Hey, I made this mess. Hey, it's in God's hands now. Fix it. You know, I do understand what he's saying, but at the same time, he has to lament a little bit and look back on some of the stuff that he's created. And I know his teammates would love to have him back. You know, the 12s would love to have him back. And, you know, he just has to take a deep breath and think this one through, man. But again, I believe that he'll be in and back in camp sooner than later.
If he doesn't show this week, he's out over $500,000 in 2 weeks.
Yeah, you know, and again, stop saying that. Don't, because I believe that Seattle will erase a lot of that debt because he's that important.
No. Those are game checks, weekly game checks, $267,000 a week.
Oh, I thought you were talking about
that. He's missing. No, he's missing.
Ah, jeez. It's a travesty that it's even gotten to this point, but. You know, there is a point of no return, and if he doesn't show up this week, yeah, there's a great chance that he'll sit out the rest of the year, because it's going to hurt. His wallet will already have taken a huge hit, and it'll be nobody's fault but his to blame.
Exactly. You know, it's just, man, you signed the contract 2 years ago. There's 3 years left, and at the time, you were one of the highest paid safeties, and everybody was kind of batting their eyes at, you're paying him how much? And now it's not enough.
Yeah, so let's hope things get better. If not, we would love to have him down in Northern California. I've always said that. So we'll see how things unfold. But enough of that, man. You had a phenomenal weekend as well. Shifting gears, you worked with the SWX again. And there was a big game, East Valley of Yakima at Prosser. And so that's big-time football in Eastern Washington. How'd that go?
Man, Sean, the Prosser Mustangs showing out like the dominance they used to have when they won the state championship back in 2007, going back to the Kellen Moore days. And goodness, you know, they went balls to the wall and they took out East Valley at halftime, Sean. It was 42-0. And thankfully, they've got a mercy rule. If you're up by 40, there is no stoppage of time. So the second half was much, much quicker because the clock did not stop.
You know, that is high school football at its finest, to have a mercy rule, a running clock. But yeah, you mentioned some great football of Prosser's past with Kellen Moore. And of course, he went on to do some great things at Boise State with Chris Peterson. Didn't fare too well in the NFL. Of course, he's still kind of floating around with a couple of teams there. But yeah, definitely some great football in Prosser.
Yeah, Kellen has recently was released by the Lions and has signed with the Dallas Cowboys. So an understudy to Tony Romo.
Well, yeah, that wouldn't be a bad understudy to be an understudy of Tony Romo. And, of course, we talked about Tony Romo marching down the field last night, you know, one last, you know, in their last drive, 90 seconds left. And, my goodness, one of our big-time listeners in Ricky Heisen, I know that he's probably still doing flips and cartwheels and hasn't come down from that yet.
You know, I ran into a Cowboy fan on the ferry Puyallup, by the way. If you follow us on Twitter, you saw that I tweeted that out and Chris Egan liked it. A ferry named after the town he's from, and Brock Hewitt as well. Dallas Cowboy fan. I said, "Wow, I see you've been shopping at the Goodwill." He starts chuckling. And I said, "Man, November 1st is going to be a good game." He's like, "Yeah." He's like, "But we'll get you again," meaning Seahawks at Cowboys. And I said, "No, we'll return the favor. You got us last year, and that's it." And then he started saying, "Yeah, I was at the game where Romo fumbled the snap in 06. And so we reminisced a little, and it was nice little banter.
You know, that is, you know, Sean, that is the game that actually started Seattle in their quest for, you know, dominance in the NFC West. If Tony Romo does what he's supposed to do as far as placing the hold, then I think that things would have been a little bit different in Seattle. But because of that, the Dallas Cowboys have had futility as far as getting to the postseason. I think that was one of their last times of actually, when was the last time they won a postseason game? It's got to be 20. Oh my goodness, it has been a long time. But yeah, that game was the game that turned things around and solidified things for Seattle.
Not to mention Drew Bledsoe's last game in the NFL as a member of the Dallas Cowboys and a former guest here on the Double. And man, yeah, a lot of things happened after that game.
You know, Raider Nation loves to pride itself on the name of the Raider Nation, and we believe that we have one of the strongest, and I'll say one of the strongest fan bases in the NFL, but none compared to the Dallas Cowboys. And it is just amazing to me. And so as I'm going around today, all of the Cowboy jerseys that come out of the woodworks and all of the, you know, men and women alike that just are so proud to be Dallas Cowboys fans. And they're talking about Super Bowls, even though Des Bryant is out for 4 to 6 weeks. They're still talking that. And it's amazing. You have to give it to the Dallas Cowboy fans for, you know, their delusional behaviors. And, you know, I mean, they really do love their Cowboys, though. It's amazing. So, you know, they're taking the fact that they beat a mediocre team in the New York Giants, who made just the craziest mistake on the planet. And, you know, Tony Romo capitalized on it. I mean, hey, that's how it's supposed to go on your way to the Super Bowl, right?
Well, hey, the Seattle Seahawks will visit them in November, and hopefully by then Seattle will iron out their wrinkles and give Dallas repayment for last year's Cowboy victory in Seattle.
Yeah, it has to be a big repayment, because to give credit to the Dallas Cowboys, my goodness, that was an old-fashioned butt-whipping, because the way they ran the ball, the way DeMarco Murray was able to do whatever he wanted to do.
Big game. No longer a Cowboy.
Which is no longer a Cowboy. And they do have running back by committee. But, you know, I believe that, you know, Seattle has to come out when we're talking about this game November the 1st, they have to come out and smack Dallas in the mouth from the jump and keep putting the gas on.
Well, we got a lot of time to talk about that in the coming weeks and months. But, Sean, did you hear who was in Seattle Saturday night?
Well, no, I didn't. Who was in town?
Man, I got to hang out with our boy Kevin Hart, me and about, 20,000 people at Key Arena.
Okay, I thought you were talking about some huge sports figure. You're talking about Kevin Hart. So you got a chance to go see.
All 3 foot four of him.
Oh, I'm sure that Seattle had a great time. I'm sure it was a packed house up there. What was some of the material? Well, no, don't try to do a Kevin Hart joke because you would just kill it. But I'm sure it was a funny show, no doubt.
It was a real good time, real good time. Had a lot of good people with me, and we enjoyed ourselves immensely, and it was a great chance to see Kevin Hart. Sold out show at 7, another show at 10:30, which G Scott was at. So a lot of cool people seeing Kevin Hart in Seattle.
Well, cool. Was that his first time in Seattle, or has he been up there before?
I haven't heard of him having any shows in Seattle. Maybe he's been here hanging out, but I'm not aware of him having shows previously. But
And of course, it was at the Key, and it was sold out there, which brings me to the question. I know that there has been some talks in Seattle as far as taking the proper steps to building an arena. So Chris Hansen is still fighting hard to get that going. I mean, what's that looking like up there?
I've heard nothing new other than, they've jumped through a couple of hoops with the city council, but really, until he secures an NBA team, construction won't start unless they revisit and change the MOU, which so far they haven't done.
Yeah, the big fight with the longshoremen and the city council, it's an uphill battle. But, I think it's something that can be done. And if they just build it first, and, I'll continue to say that, build it first and the team will show up. Adam Silver will see the error of David Stern's ways. And I think Seattle will probably have a team in the next 5 years.
So, Sean, you're saying we should play a nice outdoor movie at Marymore Park for all the Seattle City Council and King County Council. Play Field of Dreams, and then they might get it.
Sometimes it's the subtleties, man. That just might work.
Little Kevin Costner, James Earl Jones, and who knows? Maybe an arena will happen one day in Seattle. Sean, I'm super excited for Saturday coming up this weekend. Another SWX event, but not high school this time. We're going big time. We're going college football. Central Washington University is where I will be running camera, most likely on the field at Central, along with Greg Talbot on the call, former On the Double guest and sports reporter for KNDU and SWX in the Tri-Cities of Washington. I'm looking forward to it. I've never been to Central, and it should be a good time.
That is an awesome place, the Wildcats. Central Washington and Ellensburg, of course, that is the home of one John Kitna, former Seattle Seahawk, former Cincinnati Bengal, former Dallas Cowboy. My goodness, he's been all over the place, but Central Washington is the place where John Kitna came from, and Ellensburg is a lovely little town. You're gonna have fun and see what football is like there.
Yeah, it's interesting, Sean. They still do not have lights. It's like the Chicago Cubs of small college football. No lights, so they never have a night game at Central.
Yeah, but, they take a great pride in their football. And, NCAA Division III, I believe, is what they are now. And so, they get great talent from the west side of Washington, and they put a good product on the field.
Yeah, they've been up there in their respective playoff system for a long time. So it'd be great to see what football is like for the Central Washington Wildcats on Saturday. Another SWX broadcast. And Sean, we're getting the big TV truck from KHQ in Spokane.
That's good stuff, man. So of course you're learning the tricks of the trade, some of the behind the scenes stuff, and maybe this again will parlay into something. That's why we do what we do.
Sean, it's been a good show. Big thanks to our big-time guest, Greg Bell of the Tacoma News Tribune, Seahawks insider. Follow Greg at G Bell Seattle.
Yeah, man, it was awesome having him on the show and talking about the Seahawks. And, of course, we talked a little bit in the beginning as well about some of the tough stuff that's going on in Oakland. I just have to take a deep breath and know that things are going to get better. The Baltimore Ravens coming into town at the O.co. I have to believe that we're going to do some good things there. Your Seattle Seahawks, Sean Wally, taking on the Green Bay Packers. The Packers are going to be looking to avenge the loss that they had up at the Clink. Man, one win and they were going to the Super Bowl. Big shout out and a big thanks to Fu Man giving us his report from Seattle, taking care of business up there at the Mariners game at the Safe as well. Whew, this has been a DSX LLC production. As we always say, you're not in the game unless you take a shot. And when you take that shot, we hope it hits nothing but the bottom of the net. For Sean Wally up in the Tri-Cities, I'm Sean Boyd down here at the EG Studios in Elk Grove, California. For Don Newsom, the engineer, Fu Man up in Seattle, you've been listening to on the Double with the Double S Express. You know it. We'll see you next week.
Thanks for listening to On the Double with the Double S Express. Join us next Monday for great sports talk and big-time guests. On the Double with the Double S Express.